host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of Alchemy. Extremely pumped to have Tommy Chong, founder of Tommy Chong's Cannabis, and an absolute legend in cannabis culture. Tommy, it's really fantastic to have you on the show.
Well, it's great to be here.
Really great to have you on, and I've been excited to chat with you for some time. But I had, just to kind of kick things off, I had, you know, my first question, and I've always kind of wondered this, but how did you meet Cheech?
Cheech was, he wasn't hiding from the draft in Canada. He was up in Canada just in case the Viet Cong attacked from Alaska, you know. So he was up in Vancouver, and I was running a improvisational strip club. Like I had a topless bar that I converted into a improvisational theater.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the straight man that we had, his wife didn't see eye to eye with his new project. And yeah. So his wife made him quit. And so we were looking for a straight man, some real guy that could play cops and so on. And a mutual friend introduced us to each other. Cheech and I, we met in Richmond, British Columbia. And I invited him down to see the show, and he came down and he liked what he saw.
Yeah.
And he liked what he saw, and the rest is history. Yes,
that's history. So, Tommy, as far as, you know, your entertainment career, you know, I'm just curious, first and foremost, like, you know, why was cannabis at its forefront in everything that you did? I mean, because that was a long time ago and things were very different then.
Yeah. Well, I've always had a social conscience as long as I can remember, you know. I think part of it, you know, growing up poor, you know, we had very little. My dad was he was in the army, in the Canadian army during the Second World War. And then he became a truck driver, you know. And so we were scraping the bottom of the barrel like so many people back in the day. And the only entertainment we had, seriously, was Sunday school.
Right.
I wouldn't even say church, because my dad was, you know, he wasn't a religious man in any sense. You know, he's Chinese. He had his own philosophies. Mm-hmm. And so I started going to Sunday school very early in my life. And Sunday schools are great because they just teach you the love parts of the Bible. And it clicked. And then I went to Bible camp when I was 8 years old. And my brother and I were, you know, we're tripping down a dirt road, you know, barefoot, looked like Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. And a car pulled up, which was rare, you know, because in the country, you know, you don't see cars. And when you do, you can see them for miles because it was a prairie, you know. And so this car pulled up and it was full of missionaries, or had a couple of missionaries in there. And they said, "Hey, you boys want to go to summer camp?" And of course, yes, was the answer.
Yeah.
And so they had to take us home and get it okay from our parents, and which they did, my mother. And then off we went to summer camp. And my brother was older than me, 3 years older than me. And so he was with the bad kids, you know. They were the ones that were getting into all the mischief and taking advantage of that whole summer camp thing. Well, in the meantime, I was young. I was 8 years old. And so I was totally involved in all the stories and all the references. And the first night we were in camp, they taught us how to pray, you know, and it took, you know, and so I've had that knowledge all my life.
Yeah.
And so I never strayed too far into the dark side. I went in there far enough to see, but I was never afraid. You know, I never had any guilt or anything of that, because I always knew how I could bail myself out, right. Which I did. And then it just stuck with me throughout my whole life. And everything that I kind of wish for, not long for, but there's something about when you get this knowledge, this spiritual knowledge, you tend to live in the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't live in the future, you don't live in the past, you live in the moment, because every day is like an adventure, regardless of what you're doing, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what's carried me to where I am now.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, you and Cheech really, you know, you kind of became symbols of the whole cannabis culture, you know, back in the day, obviously the 70s and 80s. And, you know, I think you probably have more of a profound impact on culture than you probably would have imagined. But I think at the end of the day, I think people saw the perceptions of the plant change. You know, you guys were really very funny. You know, how did you guys really think about, you know, changing perceptions at that time when something was obviously illegal?
Well, it was sort of like the perfect recipe.
Yeah.
You know, like the recipe for a good movie or a good book is always conflict. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's what we had. I've had conflict all my life, same as Cheech, you know, him being Mexican. Mm-hmm. And then what happened to Cheech, he was doing very well in school and he was getting ready to, you know, attend college and university you know, get his degrees and so on. But the Vietnam War, you know, they wanted more bodies. And so him being Mexican, you know, right away, boom, he was right away, you know, he got drafted. And he was going to, well, he would have gone to war, but he opted to go up to Canada instead, where he sat out the war for the most part. Mm-hmm. But when we met, we had to come back, and he actually, we snuck him back into America.
He did?
Yeah, with a phony ID. And then once he got here, he had to make good with the FBI, you know. But in Canada, luckily, he broke his leg in a skiing accident, a compound fracture. And so we went to the draft board and he showed that. Then they 4X'd him, you know, 4F'd him right out of the service. Now, when I came in, thanks to Motown, I had to go to the draft board and I had to sign up and I had to do the whole thing. But I was married at the time with two kids and I had terrible flat feet, although I never made the medical, right. You know.
I have flat feet too, by the way.
Yeah.
All my friends they make fun of me all the time. They're like, oh, you have flat feet. I'm like, no, it actually is really painful, like with flat feet, yeah. Like standing long periods of time, like running. That actually hurts.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to stay out of the army, but other than that, you know, it kept, and luckily, you know, my weaknesses kept me out of sports, that's why I'm still here. You know, that's why I'm still right. Functioning. You know, I still got my knees. I still got my body. You know, yeah. But when we got together, we weren't doing pot jokes until we came down to LA. You know, up in Canada, we were doing TNA jokes. You know, anything sex, a lot of sexy stuff.
Right,
but. It didn't take us long to realize, you know, where the laughs were. And when we realized that, And then when Cheech discovered the Chicano, you know, because we never knew he was Chicano up in Canada, you know, we had no idea what he was because he wasn't letting anybody know. And I didn't find out. In fact, I didn't know he was Mexican until the night we decided to become comedians. You know, what happened? I put a band together after our stint with the improv company at the strip club. We had to change the show back to the girlies show because we were losing so much money. And so then Cheech and I formed a band, but we never played a note because we've been doing comedy for 9 months. So we went ahead and did a comedy act. And next thing you know, the show was over and we never played one note. And that's when we decided that we were going to be comedians.
That's when you knew, right? It was that moment.
Yeah, that's when we knew. Yeah, and I asked Cheech, you know, I wanted to use our name, you know, because I've been in groups where they use the name of the group and then you don't matter. If you're gone, here or gone, no one cares as long as the group was there. Mm-hmm. So I made sure that it was going to be our names. And so we were going through Tommy and Richard and Marin and Chong. And then I said, don't you have a nickname? And he said, Cheech. and that rang the bell, Cheech, yeah. And Chong. Wow.
Right?
That sounded so good.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was the beginning of a nice relationship.
Yeah, that's really nice. And so, you know, fast forward to like modern day, right, today. And so you now have Tommy Chong Cannabis.
What
talk to me about that. Like, what was the thought process around there? And, you know, why did you decide to really launch a cannabis brand?
We before the cannabis brand, we had a bong company. It was my son put together a bong company and we call it Chong Bongs. And so when Bush started his Iraqi war, he was looking for some kind of hippie distraction. And so they went after the government, went after the bong business, and they shut the bong business down and put a lot of people under house arrest and put me in jail.
For making bongs?
For having my name on the bongs, not even for making them, because technically it wasn't my company, it was my son's company.
Right.
But the feds told my lawyer that if I didn't plead guilty, they would go after my son and my wife because she had signed a check starting the bong company. And so, of course, you know, when they threatened my wife and kids right away, I just said, yeah, okay, I'll go to jail. No problem. And I did. And
how long were you in there for?
I was in 9 months. I did 9 months at Taft. And I got to tell you the truth, man, everybody knows it, that it was one of the most exciting times of my life.
Really?
And creative time of 9 months in jail. It was 9 months time out. and I responded so well because, again, you know, I've always had that spiritual training, you know. And so right away, I just went into my spiritual mode and, it was incredible. Because when you do,
you meet a lot of people there that you still talk to today, like?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, I was just, there's one, he's a caddy. He's on the PGA Tour. Now, his guy, Harris English, almost won the last tournament. He was second right up to the last couple of holes in, Eric Larson. He was my kind of my mentor when I was there. He had been in there a long time due to some horrible government shenanigans, you know. Like, he was always a golf caddy. He was a golf caddy for Mark Calcavecchi. Mm-hmm. And then, but he was also a cocaine user. He used cocaine. And when they busted his dealer, the feds made a deal. They said, give us a name, give us some big names, and you won't have to go to jail for 20 years. And so the only name she knew was Eric Larson. And so she gave up Eric, and Eric had to go to court twice. he beat the first case, and then the government refiled charges, and he lost the second case. And so because he fought it, they gave him 14 years in penitentiary for using, just to being a user. And he did 11 years, but when I met him, and then I kind of helped him because I made friends with a drug counselor. You know, he was an old musician. Yeah. And I was treated so well in prison, you know, because I was a hero for so many people. And I was on Dr. Dre's rap record, you know, so all the black kids, you know, they're in jail. They were impressed I was there, and all the Mexicans were impressed because I'm Chong and Cheech and Chong. Right. And
you're like a legend in jail.
Yeah, right. That's what it was. In fact, even the warden was impressed. You know, where I was, there was a camp, and then there was a main prison, which was a serious, mostly Spanish speaking people in that prison. And the warden was very impressed because the camp, you know, was kind of run by itself, you know, it's all low, you know, political people mostly, you know, all Haldeman and Ehrlichman and all the Nixon people were in there at one time. It was a summer camp. To be honest, you know, it was a great experience.
I bet there's not a lot of people, by the way, who could say going to jail was like summer camp. I don't know. If I ask Martha Stewart, you know, if going to jail was like summer camp, she probably would have a different use case. But I think she probably learned a lot in jail too. Right?
Oh, you learn so much. You learn about yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's yourself. You go over in your head, you know, so many times what you could have done, what you should have done. And then if you're like me, how do I take advantage of this time? And so I tried to get my high school GED. Yeah. And I failed. Because I just have a thing with math and algebra, you know,
I think you and I are very alike in many ways.
Anyway, they said, well, just put down anything and we'll pass you. Oh, and I said, come on, I can't. Can you imagine cheating in a jailhouse for a jailhouse diploma? Saying, no, I couldn't do that. No, I'm very proud of the fact that I'm a high school dropout and I'm successful. I'm more proud of that than anything, you know.
So let's go back a little bit to the, you know, to your cannabis brand. Any specific products that really stand out to you that you really love?
Whoa, we got CBD products. We got a Nice Dreams to help you sleep, and we got Good Vibes to help you stay awake. And we're getting some really incredible side effects for the energy drink. It's helped people lose body weight because it takes away the appetite and gives them energy. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a nice feeling of yourself. The Nice Dreams, on the other hand, helps people sleep. My wife uses it. Everybody, all her friends use it, you know. And these were the non-smokers, you know. They're the ones that made you smoke outside or, you know, in the car, you know what I mean? You weren't allowed to smoke anywhere. But the Nice Dreams and the Good Vibes, you can either spray it or just do a eyedropper. But that's the CBD. That's being sold legally everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then the flower, oh my God, we got pre-rolls that are just jumping off the shelf, you know, because it's just so handy, you know. It's one joint, really, some of it's mixed with hash and others, you know, really good quality. Because that's what the one thing about the Tommy Chong product, we've got people that are kind of weed snobs, you know, I call them. and they will only buy the best quality weed. We pay the top price, but it's worth it, you know. Yeah. The reputation is worth it. So we got that, and then we got pipes, and we got all sorts of things. These are the strips that we carry and sell. They're
sublingual, like the ones you put
on. Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's very cool.
Oh, they're so good.
No, I was actually reading up a little bit, and so, you know, obviously you've got the brand, but I'm also reading that you've got dispensaries coming online, Cheech and Chong dispensaries.
Big time. Oh my God. Can you imagine?
I mean, I was like, whoa, now you're opening up dispensaries. Why now?
Because perfect time. Yeah. Perfect time. But you know, what's really needed is to be legal federally. Now, once we get legal federally and we got our dispensaries up and running, I swear to God, I've been telling investors that we're going to be so popular all around the world,
yeah,
all around the world, because come on, it was a number one black market produce seller in the world, number one.
Yeah,
I mean, the cartels, you know, the weed, the illegal weed are responsible for all these cartels that were making billions and billions of dollars, mm-hmm, billions.
Yeah.
And now it once it's legal, oh my God. And then our dispensaries are going to be more than just a store where you come and buy your weed, you know, because it's going to be like a meeting place, like the old community centers in Canada.
I asked you, like, what is that? What's the experience of coming into the dispensary going to be like?
Well, we have to design them, but as far as I'm concerned, and I'm quite sure I got lots to do with it, they're going to be more than, see, up in, I'm from Canada, and in Canada, we're kind of like a socialist country. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a neighborhood, every neighborhood has a community center, and it takes care of the people that need care, you know, in the neighborhood, you know, people with mental problems and people with health problems, old people, young people, daycare kind of stuff, you know, and they're called community centers. And I envision our stores are going to be more like community centers for the neighborhoods. So there's much more than just buying your weed, you know, and leaving. It's going to be, there's going to be notice boards up there on television where you can, whatever concerns you, you can dial in and there it is. There's your answer, you know, and then we'll have people on the staff that can take phone calls and take orders and give out more than just the product itself. You got to give out, there's so many people, like I get inundated all the time with, what should I do? This is my first time, blah, blah, blah. You know, it goes on and on. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, I you know, I've been watching the Dean Martin roast lately because it's like a journey back to my time, you know, and they were all about alcohol and cigarettes, the whole show. Yeah. Johnny or D. Martin always had a cigarette and a drink in his hand, you know, and that's what they were promoting, whether they knew it or not. They were promoting drinking and smoking. And when you drink, I mean, so many bad things happen to you, you know, even though you don't intend them to, you know, but right, they do. It really is. And our product, it took the place of the drinking. And I saw it firsthand in Canada. My after hours club went from a lot of booze, and then the 60s hit, and then the weed hit. And next thing you know, the cops that used to come in and confiscate the illegal booze, they had nothing to confiscate. They used to come in there with boxes, cardboard boxes, and then just take everybody's booze, not charge anybody, but just take, you know, just collect all the booze.
Yeah, so they can drink it.
Yeah, probably. And then it changed. And the marijuana smokers, no problems, no fights, no, you know, at the end of the night, when you're running an alcohol establishment, the worst thing is the end of the night when you got to try to get these bar guys off, you know, outside.
Oh, right.
Trying to get them out of the door, and they're always trying to swing at you, fight, you know, they're always, it was a mess. But the weed people, oh my God. The only problem with them is that they didn't throw their money around like the drunks did. But that's the kind of dispensaries that I envision. And then also there's employment opportunities. Once we get our weed dispensaries going, we're going to be creating a lot of jobs. You know, from the farmers to the sellers and the people that sell it, people that process it. And there's nothing to process, by the way. You pick, you trim, and you package. That's it. Yeah. That's it. There's no additive to add this or add that or And one of the silliest things they got going now, you know, is that warning. I understand the warning and, you know, not all that, but we're dealing with a product that is good for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you do too much weed, that can be good for you. It can put you into a coma, and then your immune system works. You see, people don't realize, you know, when they induce people into comas, you know, the reason they do that is to take the mind out of the equation. And so you're not fighting, and you're not resisting, you're not worried.
The body's able to essentially heal.
The body heals by itself, and that's one of the greatest things about weed. You know, it allows you. Yeah, you do forget. You forget what you're worrying about. You know,
yes.
And your body heals. And well, look at me. I had two bouts of cancer. I had prostate cancer, which every guy usually gets. And I was one of them. And then that morphed into rectal cancer, which is not good. And if I had not got the operation I got, I would have been dead. You know, I would have been like Farrah Fawcett. They told me right away, they said, you mess with this too long, you're down, you're done. And so I got the regular doctor, you know, and I got the colostomy bag. But a week later, I was out of the hospital. I was working at doing Zootopia and healthy because I did the CBD injection. I injected CBD into my hip, and then I started, then I still do my THC. And now I couldn't be feeling any better.
That's great. That's a great
I'm story. Back. I'm back. Yeah.
I'm glad you're back. Well, listen, this, you know, so many exciting things happening with you, and obviously, you know, with the cannabis business, now the dispensaries opening, and, you know, it's just great to see. And, you know, if you've listened to the show before, we always, you know, we talk a little bit about business in the beginning, and then we just end with some quick fire questions. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. First question. Do you have any weird quirks?
Yeah, quite a few. I'm a hoarder.
You're a hoarder.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it that much in your room. It's pretty clean.
Well, that's because I'm married to a very opposite wife.
She throw a lot of stuff out. Like, Tommy, what are you doing?
Well, I don't throw stuff out. I move them to the basement or move them to other areas.
Yeah.
No. I grew up on a farm, or, you know, in the country, not a farm, but in the country. And I used to, when walking home, you know, and then when I moved into the city, I'd walk home in the alleys, and there would always be some piece of furniture, some empty bottle that looked interesting, and I would take it home. And I make crafts of it, like I make bongs out of the empty bottles. These kombucha bottles, you know.
Yeah,
they're perfect. They're perfect for making homemade bongs, because I'm a great believer in recycling and that kind of stuff. You know,
yeah.
And in fact, I got plans for big plans for garbage disposal, but we won't get into that now. No, yeah, that's my quirk. I'm a hoarder, and I admit it.
Good to know. Okay, so here's a fun question. So if you had to describe the color yellow to a blind person, how would you do it?
Ah, good question. I would describe it like the sun is yellow. And so I would take him out and feel the rays of the sun. And that's how yellow feels.
Yep. That's a good answer. That's a good answer. Okay, so something a little more fun. So if you had access to a time machine, where and when would you go? So you could travel anywhere. Anytime.
Wow, good question. Wow. Well, the thing is, we do have a time machine. You know, it's in my hand right now, and you're talking to it. Yeah. So with the phone, you can go anywhere you want. So we do have a time machine. I would, the times that interests me, I guess, would be I would like to see China at its height, at its, in, you know, when the emperors ruled and that, you know. I would like to, that's the area I would like to be, where they wrote the I Ching, you know, when he wrote the I Ching and so many, like the astrology and all that stuff. It all came from, there is a very spiritual time in our history that we're coming back to a little bit, but I would go back in time to China, because my dad's Chinese,
and right,
that's my ancestry.
Cool. Okay, so final question, what's your favorite food, all-time favorite food?
Chinese food.
I see a theme here. What's your favorite dish? Your favorite Chinese food dish?
I don't get it often. I turn cheech on it. It's called Chong Chou Yok Biang. And it's steamed salt pork with radish, what do you call it? Preserved radish root.
And cheech likes it too?
Oh my God, he's addicted to it. I turned him on to it. And the only Chinese they ever learned was Chong Chou Yok Biang. And when he says it to the Chinese, they look at him like, what? Cheech, he's persistent. He'll go to the kitchen and finally get him to go, Chong Chou Yok. Oh, and they go, oh, okay. It's and Haman Yok Biang is the same thing, only they do it with egg. But you know what it is? It's a dish that the cooks and the waiters have for themselves when everybody else is gone, you know, when they cook for the crew. That's a dish. It's usually it's in the menu in Vancouver, but it's usually not on any menu. Oh man, you mix that with rice. Oh, you've died and gone to heaven. It is so good.
We'll have to have that when I come out to LA.
Yes, for sure. I got to find a place that makes it.
Oh, I thought by now you probably figure out how to make it yourself.
Oh no, I do, but okay. It's hard to get the right. And my problem is that I'm more of a vegan now, and so I don't eat pork, and I don't eat hamburger, because that's what it is.
Yeah,
it's chopped up hamburger, and then you put a little what do you call it? Bamboo shoots chopped up. It is so good. It's salty, and it makes you drink a ton of kombucha, which I love too. But that's my favorite dish, man.
Awesome. Well, listen, Tommy, it was fantastic having you on the show, and you're still very funny, and you know, appreciate you taking the time, and congrats on, you know, your cannabis company. Congrats on all the dispensaries that are going to be opening up, and I can't wait to visit when they are open.
Oh, they're going to be great. You're going to love them. They're going to love them.
Awesome.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.